you can come down and help us to rebuild New Orleans. And I just want you to think. I ain't gonna ask you to close your eyes, but just think of this. If after this meeting you go home and everything that you left at home was destroyed, and then just think that you have to go 30 days before the government came out to help you, that you had to wear the same clothes that you have on until you be able to hustle something else to wear, and nobody would offer you any assistance, how would you feel? How would you feel while you're laying there waiting on the government and your children is going hungry? Now think how you would feel if some person of conscience would come there bringing you clean clothes, feeding your children, offering you health care. How would you feel then? That's what you can do by coming down and addressing the situation that exists now.
I see lights just all around us, but we don't have any. You know, the Seventh Ward don't have gas and we don't have telephones.
There's no phone, electricity, or gas to most of the neighborhoods. Where I'm staying is really close to a lot of powerless areas, kind of at the edge of where the flooding got really bad.
The gender ratio, since we got back, probably 3 men to every woman.
It looks pretty desolate. The flooding is really high. The water line is a brown mark that kind of just runs for blocks and blocks. And if you start heading towards higher ground, you can see it receding, but for the most part, it stays eye level.
Absolutely everything that you can imagine is just not really working. It's quite surreal to go into a government agency or some kind of business and you need to get some sort of errand done and nothing works and everyone is running around frantically and maybe there's no power and the disaster is not over.
Yeah, there's still tourists in the quarter. It was business as usual, ignoring the rest of the destruction around them, I guess.
New Orleans is we're suffering. I think we are shell shocked.
It's been over 2 months since the storm of Hurricane Katrina rocked the Gulf Coast. The media has lacked follow-through on this issue, and where is the attention of the nation now? The situation facing residents of New Orleans is a dire one today. Many areas of town are still without power, without gas, and many other basic services, while the wealthier, more tourist magnet zones of the city have their amenities restored. The city is missing many of its residents due to the many obstacles in the way of returning and to the staggering amount of evictions from homes and apartments that are taking place every day there. People have come to realize that there is no government infrastructure or accountability in place to address the needs they have for survival, so they are doing for themselves. Individuals are coming forth in New Orleans and around the country to organize and provide services such as healthcare, house cleanup and rebuilding, food and clothing distribution, as well as cop watching and legal support. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we bring you the voices of people who are directly engaged in grassroots efforts to take care of each other. Many refer to and are working on some project affiliated with the Common Ground Collective, which is a local community-run organization offering assistance, mutual aid, and support to New Orleans communities that have been historically neglected and underserved. Their work aims to give hope and stability to communities by working with them, providing materials, money, information, and people working together in rebuilding their lives in just and sustainable ways. Landlines are very limited in the city, and all of the interviews we conducted were via cell phones, so please bear with the sound quality. We will hear first from Charles Steen Jones, lifelong New Orleans resident.
I was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. I had to evacuate from New Orleans due to Hurricane Katrina. I went, when I first evacuated, to Jackson, Mississippi. I stayed there somewhere around 3 weeks. While there, I heard that the mayor of the city, Ray Nagin, was allowing the city to come back and wanted everyone to come on back home and rebuild. I went home, and the second day I found out from the apartment complex where I live that I had to leave there because they were condemning the apartment. They said they were unlivable due to the roof damage. We didn't have flooding in our area, but we did have a lot of extensive roof damage as well as mold and mildew. I had to leave when I explained to them I didn't have any mold in my apartment. They told me that they were sure I had mold, it just hadn't surfaced, and that they wanted me as well as everyone else to leave the apartment complex. I felt as though I was being, feel like, abused to that fact because I didn't have anywhere to go. During the process, I decided if I had to move, first of all, I needed to try to have a moving truck to move what possessions I could salvage, as well as be able to find somewhere else to move to. Well, there was nowhere I could move to in New Orleans, and there was no way to move any of my possessions. I decided I'm fighting a losing battle. I couldn't take it anymore. I wasn't going anywhere. My house was livable. I was going to stay in my home. I heard on the news that Jesse Jackson was coming to town. And I was so frustrated with not being able to take care of my business, I decided I needed to go and see Jesse Jackson and the mayor and all. At the meeting, I brought a sign stating that I needed housing. Help me, please. And also, it's not fair to want casinos when people need housing. I did get to talk to Jesse Jackson. He couldn't help me, he said, but he did send me in the right direction for help. Well, I found that things were going, progressing slowly, and there was nothing that seemed to be going as fast as me having to get out the next day. I decided that I met Jenka and a lot of the family at Common Ground. They said that they were going to help me with the problems I was having. They all pushed and helped me to make my decisions as far as what I wanted to do. And that decision came up to me having a press conference as well as alerting all the neighbors that were still in the apartment complex as to what I was doing as far as fighting for us to be able to stay. Everyone there felt as though they had a right to stay because their apartment didn't have mold and mildew as well. So we had this big meeting, and about five news channels were out there. And we tried to get some matters covered, which was very hard at the time, but they saw that I was actually trying to push the issue of us having to stay there instead of being evicted. They kind of got wind of me having this meeting, and the same day that we were having the meeting, they put out some flyers saying that we weren't being evicted, in so many words, but we were being asked to leave so we can have our apartment complex repaired so we can come back. No one believed that because everybody was aware of the city changing. It was supposed to be changing into a new city where they wanted rich white people to be allowed to move in and buy land that was destroyed by the hurricane and start New Orleans over as a richer and whiter New Orleans. We felt that this was a form of discrimination, and I just took it to the highest level as far as fighting and letting them know I wasn't going to have them move me and shove me around like they wanted to. I stayed there past the deadline, which turned out to be the 28th, if I'm not mistaken, because Kathleen Blanco, our governor of Louisiana, had stated that no managers could put out tenants until that day. And after that day, if they don't hear from anyone, they could start evicting people legally. I stayed there until like the 30th. And I decided from there that I was going to go ahead on because I knew I had to leave. I had some word from family to just come on up to Austin, Texas, where I have been staying. I don't know what's going on as far as in New Orleans with Forest Park. I do know that they were supposed to be cutting out and repairing the apartment complex. I haven't gotten word from anyone, and that's something I really need to do is find out what's actually going on over there. Because if they wanted everybody to get out in a hurry, that meant they wanted to start the work to be able to have us back in as soon as possible. New Orleans is my home, and you can't take New Orleans out of me. Of course, I want to return back to New Orleans. Austin, Texas, where I am, is a very nice place. Right now, I'm in Salido by my daughter. She's the only one in Texas besides myself. My other two daughters are fortunate to be able to stay in the city of New Orleans. I'm taking it one day at a time out here in Austin, Texas. I still don't have a bed. I don't have a refrigerator. I just received a stove, and I'm able to cook for myself and have warm meals, something that I'm used to. I'm a diabetic, so I have to eat properly, and I haven't found any work yet. I almost don't want to look for work because I want to go back home and get started with my life out there. Well, the people are beautiful out here, but it's not home. It's simply not home. I just Friday went to the doctor for the first time, besides going over there on common ground while I was in New Orleans and getting medicines and things I needed. But since I've been here, this was my first time going to the doctor, just seeing about myself so I can keep up with my diabetic medicine and my eye medicines for glaucoma, as well as my high blood pressure medicine. Like I say, I'm just taking it one day at a time. That's all I can do.
This is Charlestine Jones describing the experience she had visiting the Free Health Clinic, which is running out of the Common Ground Relief Center in the Algiers neighborhood of New Orleans, Louisiana.
When I went to them, I was very, very ill. I had been without my blood pressure medicine, my glaucoma medicine, and they were very kind and compassionate to me. The young lady that assisted me, she even kind of like counseled with me because she saw I needed to talk. She sat there and she just patiently and lovingly allowed me to say what was going on. After I finished, she offered me to come back and just have someone to talk to if I needed, as well as come back and I can get me a massage to help calm me, as well as coming and having acupuncture if I needed it. She even said if I just wanted to come and hang around and just be around a different set of people and get away from what was going on at my apartment complex, I was welcome. So they really showed me that they were very compassionate people. It was a beautiful experience. It really made a difference in my life. I do plan when I go back to the city to unite with them and help in any way I can, because I feel like they helped to beat this means that I'm fighting with in New Orleans, which I did, as far as I'm concerned, considered myself winning, because I fought it legally and had a contract written out, had the big managers come in from New York, and they had a meeting with me because they saw I was very furious and I was raising a lot of noise over there in the Algiers area. Got like all of New Orleans residents to realize New Orleans is your home. We were there because that's what we loved, and we should all fight and struggle to go back there as soon as possible and rebuild New Orleans for us. Not for casinos and not for other people to just buy our land and shove us down in the outskirts of the city where the flood zones are. We have a right to be where we were in the beginning, and we have a right to have fair housing and fair living. Together, we can fight this cause and win. And we can't let everybody misuse us and just shove us away and keep us away like they're trying to do.
Going home tomorrow. Thank you.
can feel New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need to parachute when I get through walking the blues. When I get back to New Orleans.
This is Mama D. She's a lifelong New Orleans resident and community activist for social justice. Her house in the 7th Ward is serving as a relief center, particularly for the 12 blocks around her house. She was interviewed Monday, November 14th.
This is the 7th Ward. People talk about the Creole neighborhood in New Orleans. That's where I live. My family integrated the Creole neighborhood. Yes, indeed. These are the strongest, oldest houses in New Orleans. These people were craftsmen, you know, even during enslavement. 90% of the skilled labor in New Orleans were the Africans. They didn't get the paycheck, but they did the work. And I went to this meeting at the Sheraton, and believe it or not, there were 20-some-odd people sitting on the panel, of which I'm told two are from New Orleans, but they weren't present. And I went and spoke. And my first sentence I did in a partial patois. And then when I finished, they were all looking at me real strange. I said, I know, you don't know the language, so how you going to, you don't know the people, so how will you know what to do for New Orleans? I think it's a disgrace, baby, because the majority of the population is not here. People could have been coming to New Orleans for soon will be 300 years to come with us and enjoy our crazy. You know, the Mardi Gras, the biggest party in the world. Our food, our spirituality, our dad's funerals, just the way we act in general. And now they want to decide that they want to be here and it has to change. I find that absolutely amazing. It was our spirit that brought them, but now it's not good enough to be here. And when I say New Orleans, I'm talking about all of New Orleans. Caucasians, Black, polka dot, paisley people, everybody. And yet we are too stupid, the indications are to us, to be a part of the planning process of how to restore New Orleans. Isn't that amazing? New Orleans is, we're suffering. I think we are shell-shocked. An older guy I brought, they were down in the lower Ninth Ward the other day, 3 days ago, as a matter of fact. This is the third day. And took a picture of some debris. And you had to look at it very closely, but when you did, you recognized the hand that was sticking out of the debris. They have not even recovered all of the dead in the lower Ninth. And yet, we are planning the new New Orleans, and we have not rectified the old New Orleans. I live in a city with less than 500,000 people. And we have been evacuated to 50 states. Plus, I'm told, maybe a couple of possessions of America. And that's something we claim, still claim in other pieces of space. But anyway, some of us didn't even leave. So I'm just kind of trying to figure out if we can go solve the world's problem, and we got this little bitty city sitting in the swamp, and we couldn't figure out the simple things that needed to be done in case of a catastrophe that we created. That's really amazing, too. I can't fathom what that was about. Katrina did not devastate us. It was the bombing of the walls of the canals, the first two, the 17th Street Canal and the London Avenue Canal. And it, the third bombing was a repeat. It was the 40th anniversary of Betsy and bombing the walls in the Lower Ninth Ward here in New Orleans. They're not saying bombing, they're saying breaching. It's not breaching. I mean, the loud noise that we heard right after Katrina, the water came like somebody put the Atlantic Ocean maybe a block away from my house. And then there's another group of people, I say poor to middle-aged white people, who were put out of New Orleans by the misnomer of people being human beings and living in the same area. And they're not discriminating, boo. They're treating us all bad, bad, bad. Classism and racism, to be honest with you. And that's sad. That's really sad because, you know, this is 2005. And they say we had some
evacuation planners and people who were going to make this a safe event. If they didn't know, Lord have mercy, but they had to have known where these people were. There was preference even in evacuation. And then everybody's got to remember, in the west they have earthquakes, in the north they have snowstorms, east coast, lower east coast, and south we have hurricanes. We're used to hurricanes. We have mildew and mold in New Orleans, whether we have rain or not, because we live in a swamp. This is a land-filled swamp. Those of us who have history know that. So we weren't afraid of Katrina, and that we want people to understand that. After a hurricane, you get this real calm, and then you get a little rain. Everybody knows that. While we were talking about this session, we heard back-to-back, two loud booms. And while we were still trying to find out what that was about, the water, as long as I've been talking to you on this phone tonight, I would be in 6 feet of water from the beginning to the end, right about now, and would have been there for about 5 minutes. The water just came immediately. But it was rolling. It was rolling like something you see on TV with the surfing thing, just taking everything in its path down the street. Cars and human beings. We watch bodies float around us. Some of it's a little bit too hard to talk about, though, because by day 10, the bodies were floating all around us. We were being threatened if we went out to try to rescue people. And the New York police and the Wayne County, Michigan police and some militia and I mean, they even brought some militia group from Israel. You would have thought they were coming to Iraq, Iran. You wouldn't have thought they were really, really coming to save people. I mean, you just don't draw 4 or 5 guns as you're approaching somebody's house and say you're coming to save them. Don't believe the hype out there that we're ready for Mardi Gras. We're not even ready for Thanksgiving. Live in America, and somebody lied and said that a long time ago, and I believe them. And but then I wasn't taught to be afraid either. So I've never really responded to a curfew. I go when I want and I return when I don't want. I've lived in this community all my life. I walk it at night. New Orleans are walkers, because that's what we thought was so ironic. How the hell are you going to tell people to evacuate when you know from your bus ridership ain't nobody driving? We really need to know why FEMA won't give us the bodies of our relatives. We need to know why whoever had the children that were separated from their parents, why they're using something about some privacy act and not to let people know where their children are. We want to know why when FEMA, when a couple of bodies do get away, FEMA's calling, threatening funeral homes, telling them they better not touch the bodies. We want to know why we are told there's a warehouse. And I know there are a lot of phantom stories, but you know, Jahez has been with us. We have the police stealing on film. We have the police stealing Cadillacs and Corvettes on film. We have the police looting, as they were saying we were doing, on film. If y'all see any, you know, New Orleans police cars up your way, we'd like for you to confiscate them and bring them back because the police went AWOL in the police cars.
While we were on the phone interviewing Mama D, the Louisiana State Police pulled over a car across the street from her house.
Okay, I'm going to walk and talk to you, baby, because as we speak, we're being harassed by the police in front of my door. So I'm coming to see what's up with this.
You say the police are at your...
You stay on the line so you can hear how they respond to me. You're on...
Yeah, I'm on.
Will somebody please turn the music down for me? And let me go see. They got two, three cars of them. And I don't know who they got or what they're doing, but I'm going to right now. Stay with me, please.
I'm with you.
What's the matter, baby? What's the matter, darling? Excuse me! Excuse me! What's the matter? What's the problem? Are you listening, baby?
I'm listening.
I don't know how I'm doing, baby. What's the matter?
Okay, we're just going to talk to them. Why don't you go back over there, and then I'll talk to you just until we get through and talk with them, okay? Okay, ma'am?
I beg your pardon?
I ask you, if you go back over there for me, please.
Would you like to tell that to the chief of police?
No, ma'am. I really don't care.
You don't care to talk to him?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
You don't care. I don't work with the chief of police. Okay.
Have they given you a reason for
you
coming
to
their house?
You work for the state of Louisiana?
Yes, ma'am. Not the chief of police. Please go back over there for me.
Go upstairs then, baby. Get me a phone, y'all. Go upstairs. Go upstairs and look in the corner and get the chief. Go upstairs and look on the corner on my desk pad and get the chief of police. Riley's number, baby. Hurry up. It's the state police, miss. Are you listening, baby?
I'm listening.
It's the state police. Why you got the little sister over there by herself? Yes, and indeed. Ain't this pitiful?
Have they given you a reason for coming into your house?
They're not in my house. They got this little young Caucasian girl on the corner. They just stopped her car and start talking crazy. They got all lights, the blue lights flashing. They got everything going on up here. And they got over there by herself, and they won't let me come. It's three cars, all the lights in my face, baby, so I can't really look and tell you how many of them it is.
Just keep yourself safe, okay?
Hey, there ain't no safety here, baby. This is the kind of dog they put on us every day. Every day. Every day. This is the harassment with dead people floating around us. This is the harassment we get in New Orleans every day. If y'all think it's all right, come see. Come see. Come see what we're living with, baby. I just left the damn governor. You're not going to believe this. I just left the Sheraton Hotel. And this is what we had to deal with. The insanity of this. They got dead bodies in the night ward y'all can go help dig up. I mean, this is pure raw harassment. They're in the girl car 2-3 times. They're all around the girl car. I don't know what they're going in their pockets and putting and doing now. I'm witnessing this. I'm looking at this. Got the baby back there on the car with lights flashing in her face. We need help. We need help in America, baby. But I know they boss. I will deal with this. I will deal with this. Will y'all please tell us what's going on? They got the little white girl jacked up on the car. She was over by my house. These are the volunteers. They don't work hard all day today. These children work hard all day every day, mister. See all these blue tarps we have on these houses? They bring these children here from all over this country. I mean, why do I have 5 police cars, state trooper cars? I'm a car doing this, man. The young man they have on the car is an electrician. And the other little guy, he does some plumbing. They've helped me all over my neighborhood for the last couple of weeks, baby. Now he's telling me I got to move. They're on the downtown side of Aubrey. I'm on the other corner, and they got 2 lights in my face.
Are these people that you've seen before, the people that you said is an electrician and a plumber?
I can't tell you right now what their names are. One is named Bill. After we don't watch bodies float up and down the street, and these children coming here like this. Are you hearing this, baby?
I'm hearing it.
This is what New Orleans is like. This is what New Orleans is like.
At this point in the phone interview with Mama D, we lost contact. When we called back, Matt, who's a supporter that's been staying at Mama D's house, answered the phone, and this is what he had to say about the events taking place outside the house.
After running an errand, and they were being followed by some, I guess, Louisiana State Police, got with to the corner of where Mama D's house is, and were pulled over at that point. So there were 2 people in the car, I believe, and then a third went over there to see what's going on. So all 3 of those people are currently being detained by the vehicle. Mama's on the phone now with the New Orleans Chief of Police, I believe, Mr. Warren.
Who are the people who are being detained right now?
I know Becky and a gentleman named Jay and a gentleman named Bill. I don't have any last names for you.
Yeah, but I mean, are they people who are volunteering?
Yes, they're people that we have been working at this relief center here.
Okay, so you're at a relief center right now.
Yes, well, Mama D's house, yes.
Okay. And is it
at the corner where of Dordogne and Aubrey where Mama D's house is. We're doing food distribution, and this is our center that we base our work crews out of for doing gutting houses and that sort of thing. We have approximately 10 to 12 volunteers that are living here, and then a number of people who come during the day and stay elsewhere.
Has there been any police harassment before?
Certainly. 3 to 4 weeks ago, it was a fairly common occurrence that, well, first of all, what you need to know, if you didn't already get this, is that this neighborhood here, about a 12-block radius of this house, has been without power since Hurricane Katrina. So the police department has been enforcing an 8 o'clock curfew in the areas of town that do not have electricity for quite some time. The curfew in the French Quarter and other areas of town that have electricity is 2 a.m. They are frequently pulling people over for simply being on the street after 8 p.m.
The areas where you are right now, there's been no work to try to provide electricity. I mean, it seems like if they can put electricity up in parts of town, they can get it in other parts of town. It seems like they're kind of playing favorites with who gets electricity and who doesn't.
Certainly. There are plenty of conspiracy theories relating to all of this, that this is an instrument that they're using to prevent people from coming back to their homes. Currently, it looks as though the people that were in the vehicle have been released, and the police have turned their lights off, and those volunteers are headed back here to the camp. So, yes, all three of the Louisiana State Police vehicles that were here have now departed.
Hey, baby.
Hey, you all right?
How can you be all right with this? These are the state troopers, our Louisiana state troopers. The one just told me he'd be back for my ass in a little while when he was driving off. These are young children from all over New America. All they doing is working like damn dogs all day long. They're unfortunate in our community, and they're going to be harassed by these people. They were all by my house listening to music. I just fixed a big meal. We just had collard greens, spaghetti meat sauce, garlic bread, beet salad. We just got your reason. This is what we do. This is how we break bread in the evening after we work hard all day. We talk about our experiences. We're not harming anybody. I need to go to all this. Maybe we get them to call you back another time, okay?
Okay.
The day following this phone interview with Mama D, we called to check up on people and make sure that everyone was all right. We spoke with Bill, who was one of those detained by the state police outside of Mama D's house. Bill is an electrician who works with a collective called Countercurrent, and they are in New Orleans, Louisiana right now, lending their skills as electricians to the rebuilding and reconstruction efforts that are taking place in Mama D's neighborhood.
There's a lot of police here. There's not just the local police. The police that we had an interaction with last night were Louisiana State Police, and they also had some New York police with them. They pulled us over as we were coming back to Mama D's house. where we're set up is her house in this neighborhood in the 7th Ward. She stayed here through the storm and worked with people to help people evacuate, to help people that wanted to stay to find food and shelter. And now she's working to try to get people back in her neighborhood. And not just in her neighborhood, but around the city to try to help people that want to come back. There are a lot of barriers right now. We have been hearing lots of stories of, you know, police harassment and brutality. The officers that pulled us over, the state police, I mean, they claimed that their reason for pulling us over was because they thought that we didn't have seatbelts on. That's just their excuse for pulling us over. Lots of people have been saying they've been getting guns pulled on them for no reason, or you know, if they talk back, that they've been beaten down. While I was in California, that's when we decided we wanted to come down here and help out. Over the course of a month, actually managed to get quite a number of material and monetary donations link in with local activists, mainly being Common Ground and Mama D's, where I am right now.
Getting home alone, thinking about my past, wondering how I made it and how long it's gonna last.
This is Circle A Radio, and you're listening to interviews with people in New Orleans. Up next, an interview with Greg Rufus, working with the New Orleans Legal Action Workers Project, which is a project of the Common Ground Collective.
What we've been doing initially is we started to go down to the detention center as it was initially set up. It was called Angola South, which is in reference to the infamous Angola prison here in Louisiana. A detention center was set up in the Greyhound bus station. We started out going down to inquire where the people who we were observing being arrested were being taken. We started doing a cop watch in the Algiers neighborhood and came to realize that since the Orleans Parish prison was closed, we didn't know where anyone was being taken. We heard rumors about the bus station and went down there, and sure enough, it was a prison. So we started to hang out there and wait for people to come out and interview them on their experience. And the stories that started to come out were the catalyst behind us starting this whole project, the New Orleans Legal Action Workers. We've had situations where people who were coming out of the bus station detention center were telling us stories about having been beaten or abused in some way. So we started to request interviews with the jailers themselves. They didn't know who we were and weren't interested in talking. But as we asserted ourselves, they either became extremely annoyed with us, realized we were not going to be going away, and started to give us a little bit more access. One of the things we found out was that in the detention center, they were more or less housing the inmates on the outside in open air with no blankets, with no mattresses, on hard concrete. 20 people per cell was the average. A gentleman who we interviewed was beaten initially when he went into the jail and also shot with the pellet bag. He managed to smuggle one of the pellet bags out in his pocket. He was also beaten the morning before he left to go to court. So those are the kinds of situations we were dealing with. We don't know what it's like in the Orleans Parish prison, because we haven't really been able to go in. I myself was able to go in. I was arrested Friday night while doing cop watch. I was able to make a phone call, but there were also inmates in there who didn't have access. I also saw inmates in there who, one inmate in particular, who had a medical condition. He had a broken or severely sprained ankle, happening in the system, outside of the system, on the streets. There's been a lot of arrests. Most of the arrests are of young black males. Detainees were being given options of pleading guilty or not guilty. They were defended by a public defender en masse. So 20 detainees would be seen by a single public defender who would inform them at the beginning of the trial that they had the right to plead guilty or not guilty. A plea of guilty would get them either a fine, the averages are about $200 to $300 for the fine, or probation, or rather community service. The other option was not guilty, at which point the public defender would inform them that if they pled not guilty, they would most likely spend 21 days in Hunt's facility awaiting their trial. Unfortunately, the majority of the people have pled guilty and have been assessed fines, in many cases jail time and probation. We've got a situation down here where there are cops from all over the country, and a lot of these outside officers are patrolling with New Orleans police officers and are not being held accountable by whatever department they're here with. A lot of them don't wear their name badges. Their cars are unmarked. There's no accountability for someone from the community who might want to know who these cops are. The New Orleans police are probably feeling a lot more open to commit these acts because they have the backing of the federal officers and the backing of out-of-town cops. We have a couple of locals working with us. The locals are hesitant to be totally involved because, for one, we can't protect them at all times. Really, our issue is that we need people with knowledge of the law. We need people who have done legal observer-type training, cop watch, who are willing to come and help organize in the community. And we need equipment. We need scanners. We need cameras that are able to shoot at night without the light. We're very limited in the ability to observe the cops from a distance, which we would prefer to do. So for any listener out there that's done legal observer training and or is willing to help train community members, most definitely come on down and join us and be a part of this effort. We really need you.
Next up, members of the Common Ground Collective speak about the rapidly growing Latino population in New Orleans and their work with the Latino Health Outreach Project.
My name is Bay Love. I've been here for 3 weeks, pretty much working with Common Ground Collective, particularly at the clinic, pretty much to set up like Spanish-speaking services. I'm hoping to offer everything that we have in English in Spanish in neighborhoods where there are primarily Spanish-speaking people. And part of that has been through a Saturday clinic that we've established in the neighborhood of Kenner. We're working with local health authorities over there, as well as different church groups. And then we've also been doing like a number of migrant clinics where we actually go out to migrant encampments and provide like vaccination clinics and other basic services.
My name is Catherine, and I am from New Orleans. I grew up here, and before the storm, I was a medical student at Tulane, and then decided to take the year off to stay down here and work mainly with Common Ground, but also with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund to set up free grassroots healthcare systems in the city. And one of the main projects that I'm working on is with Bay and Jennifer to set up the project that Bay was talking about, and then also just helping people set up smaller free clinics in different parts of New Orleans.
My name is Jennifer, and I grew up in Baton Rouge and lived away for about 15 years and came back after the storm to work at the Common Ground Clinic. And after the first few weeks of being here, I decided that I was ready to move back to Louisiana, so I'm here for, I don't know, the long term, and I'm working with the Latino Health Outreach Project, going out and vaccinating workers. And one of the things that's really exciting to me about it is that we, by providing the vaccines, we have access to a population that is otherwise really hard to access. Many of them are being kept in their hotels and aren't able to leave except to go directly to their work sites and back again.
Basically, people are doing pretty much any variety of jobs. Right now, there's a lot of house gutting that needs to happen, a lot of roof repair.
cleaning of office buildings and other really big buildings like hotels and hospitals, mold removal, debris removal. People are doing any of that kind of work. A lot of it is through contractors who are here. There's a really big number of subcontractors who are working in New Orleans. Basically, they have set up like hotel rooms where people are staying in pretty big numbers. People travel from the hotel to their work sites and then back, and once they're back, they're not allowed to leave again. Some people are being recruited actually at the U.S.-Mexico border and then being trucked in from Texas or from Arizona or New Mexico. And other people are coming here from different parts of the U.S. where they live. Some people are here legally and have green cards, so they travel here from wherever they were living. Some people have jobs lined up before they get down here. Others come and look for work, either with contractors or as day laborers. We have two kinds of clinics going on, and one thing that we're doing, and this is what we started out doing, is we scout the city and we look for work sites during the day. We talk to the workers on the job and find out where they're staying at night and ask them a few questions if we're able to. Sometimes if their bosses or contractors are around, then we can't talk to them as much. And then we also do some scouting at night where we go to hotels. Like, sometimes we'll see a hotel during the day that looks like people are living there, but it also looks like it's not open for business because it's all messed up from the storm. That's one big piece, is just the actual scouting and looking for the locations. Then we go to those sites where people are living in the evenings when they would have gotten home from their work. So we talk to the workers and find out what they might need, just see if they've already been vaccinated. We're giving tetanus shots. And also finding out if people are having any other kinds of health problems, either related to their work or not. Just kind of get a sense of how many people are there and what their needs might be. Sometimes we encounter the contractors while we're there on that kind of first contact trip, and we interface with them as we need to. But we really try to primarily go through the workers themselves. We set a time with them, and then we go back usually the next night and set up in the parking lot. We just have a little box full of our vaccine and full of over-the-counter medication. We go out with an herbalist and just see as many people as there are. Sometimes we see as many as 60 people. Sometimes it's as few as 8. So we give shots in the parking lot, and sometimes we're out with doctors and with nurses who are able to prescribe and to diagnose, and other times we're with folks who don't have those prescribing powers, and so we just do much more basic care. That's kind of what the really highly mobile clinics look like.
So sort of the other piece of what we're doing, I guess, could be called a satellite clinic. And basically, we did a lot of research. There's a particular area of New Orleans, which is actually another city called Kenner, primarily where the Hispanic population resides. So we did a fair amount of research out there, trying to figure out what the needs of the population were and sort of trying to touch base with other services that were available. And as it turns out, even before the hurricane, there was a very, 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 very limited amount of services available in Spanish. In fact, as far as I've been able to tell, there was really only one clinic that was offering a Spanish language clinic one day a week, which was on Saturday. Since the hurricane, there's been an influx of, I would guess, thousands maybe of Latino workers coming to do reconstruction work in New Orleans. We connected with the Hispanic apostolate, some outreach workers who work for the Office of Public Health, Jefferson Parish Human Services, as well as, you know, different church organizations. A lot of stuff in that community is organized heavily through the churches. So we actually negotiated a space with a Lutheran church in Kenner on Saturdays, and we've had a pretty much, well, not full-service clinic, but we've had offered quite an amount of services on Saturdays at the Lutheran church in Kenner. And the way that we staff that clinic is that we actually bring staff out from Common Ground Clinic, which is based out of Algiers. For example, yesterday at the Saturday clinic, we had a pediatrician who was able to write prescriptions, an acupuncturist, a physical therapist, 3 medical students who were working under the physician, and 2 nurses. One thing that we're really happy about with that is that we have been trying real hard to work in conjunction with the services that are already available in that neighborhood, and we're also excited about working with Pastor Gonzalez at the Lutheran Church, because we don't know exactly how long we're going to be able to keep up these services that we're providing from the Common Ground end, because we're primarily donation and volunteer-based clinic. So we want to make sure that people get connected with the services that are going to continue to be available after, you know, Common Ground may have to reduce what we're able to offer.
I would say that one of the main strategies that we have is making sure that we're building relationships that are responsible and accountable to people who are here in this community.
I just wanted to add to that. I think one of the things that has been hard for me to get my mind around since I got here is the fact that there has not really been historically a Latino migrant worker population in New Orleans. So it's not like in Portland where you can just say, oh, you want to talk to migrant workers? Well, you can go over to Burnside and find people there, and they can tell you where more people are. There's just not that one kind of known lineup site. So much of our work ends up being asking lots of questions, doing a lot of driving around and just looking at buildings and kind of trying to guess what might be going on in town. We're all just scrambling to try and meet these new needs here.
We want to make sure that volunteers are Spanish speakers and or Latino people. We want to make sure that people have a sensitivity towards undocumented workers and that people are willing to kind of get a feel for what the project is about.
I was speaking with one woman who is a resident alien in the United States, and she applied for FEMA money because she's been living in New Orleans for a long time. Her property was damaged. She applied for FEMA money and was granted $6,000 over three checks and spent most of that and used some of it to help friends out who also had property damage. And FEMA has since called her back and said that she was not eligible for the money, that they made a mistake in granting her that money, and that she's now responsible for paying that back. So that's just one example of the way that people's immigration status is sort of affecting their access to funds. And I think that really the stories that we're hearing are just the tip of the iceberg, and it's really frightening to think about how many people are in similar situations.
We do have this very surreal situation where the National Guard and the Red Cross refer people to our clinic. We're definitely filling a need that the state and the private clinics and hospitals are not able to fill.
I have a story about someone who was a next-door neighbor of the clinic in Algiers, who is a Latino man from Houston, Texas. He was born in the U.S. He's a U.S. citizen, and he's been doing work here right now, like a lot of people. You know, even U.S. citizens are moving to New Orleans right now because there's a lot of work. So he was in a truck going from Orleans Parish to Chalmette, which is another area that got pretty heavily hit. And there's a big blockade in between Orleans Parish and St. Bernard Parish. And I'm pretty sure that it's NOPD, New Orleans Police Department, but I'm not positive. But somebody is staffing a checkpoint in between these two parishes. So anyway, this truckload of people, I think there was about eight Latino men in the truck, got stopped at the checkpoint, and they asked everybody to get out and show their green cards. And some of the people had green cards and some of them didn't. And Ricardo, our friend, did not have a green card because he's a U.S. citizen, you know, so he showed them his driver's license. And they were like, no, man, we need to see your green card. And he was like, well, I don't have a green card. I'm a U.S. citizen. And they wouldn't let him in. They wouldn't let anybody who didn't have a green card into St. Bernard Parish to work.
We went to a hotel where workers were staying. We were just kind of doing our initial meeting of them and talking with people. We met these guys who had driven down from Arkansas. There were eight of them that came down, and they were looking for work and living in their pickup truck because the hotel was kind of booked up by one of the companies that was doing the contracting here. And so in that hotel, people were sleeping like 8 to 10 in a room. And we had heard reports that people were getting really sick there. So these guys came up, and they had just decided to park in the parking lot of the hotel because there were other Latino guys around, and they would have sort of safety in numbers rather than just parking out under a bridge or something. So they were living in this truck, and they had been working as day laborers and had worked for several weeks, and they just kept not getting paid. So they'd work all day for one person and then not get paid at the end of the day. They had one job where they worked for like a week or 10 days or so for the same guy, and then the guy just disappeared. Never paid them, all eight of them. He didn't answer his cell phone, and they couldn't find him anywhere. That's another thing that's happening, is because there is no culture of day laborers here, and there's no accountability, and there's no system to help workers get paid. And so if people are undocumented, they're just in this completely precarious situation where they can't necessarily do anything about it, and where there aren't a lot of lawyers or organizations that can help advocate for them.
At Common Ground, we've been having a particular issue with police intimidation and police harassment of relief workers and the community that we're trying to serve, and we're finding a real need to have people who are well-versed in the law around those issues come down and help us out. Also, yes, they were saying money and just donations of medical supplies and vaccines in particular would be very helpful. We recently just ran out of flu vaccines, and we're running low on hepatitis vaccines, which are things that, you know, we give out very regularly, and donations are our main way that we get a hold of those things. So if anyone has any connections to that, we would really, really appreciate that. I'd also like to connect people to the Common Ground website, which is www.commongroundrelief.org. And there's very specific information about what medical supplies are needed and how exactly people can connect with us to donate those supplies. And lastly, I just wanted to add, if people are interested in coming down and volunteering, Common Ground right now is organizing a road trip for relief, which we're trying to get over 300 volunteers to come down for around 10 days on either side of Thanksgiving. People can learn more about that on the website. We really appreciate having this interview and getting out there right now, because we feel like there's a lot of media attention that was on New Orleans right after the hurricane is quickly dissipating. And we just can't really stress enough that as people are continuing to come back to New Orleans, some people for the first time, the need for volunteers and support down here really has not decreased.
We definitely would like to have contact with anyone who's interested in helping in any way that they can. We can definitely help figure out some creative ways to address the huge, crazy, crazy situation here.
It's not your fault, punch our train. It's not your fault, Libby Brave. It's not your fault, Hurricane. It's not.
Touch with Mama D, write 1733 North Dorjanwa Street, Dorjanois, New Orleans, Louisiana, 70119. Common Ground is sponsoring a road trip for relief from November 20th through the 27th and are asking volunteers to converge in New Orleans to help clean and rebuild. You can get more information through the Common Ground website at commongroundrelief.org. Locally, a forum will be held about anti-state perspectives on Hurricane Katrina, its social context, and its aftermath, Thursday, December 8th at 7 p.m. at the IWW Hall, 616 East Burnside in Portland. Circle A Radio airs every first and third Wednesday of the month here on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. You can contact us at info@circlearadio.org. Our next show will air December 7th. Thanks for listening.
Now we're in the Gulf of Mexico. Must be the place where the souls of all the poor folks go. New Orleans, king and queen, Mardi Gras, lost it all. Family, history. It's not your fault.